Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. We have some really special topics and wonderful guests this weekend. We have Rabbi Usher Weiss, the Baal Mechaba of the Minchas Usher. He's a famous Kloisenberger Chassid. He's the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital, which is a very acclaimed position. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was Rav there preceding him. The Tzitz Eliezer was Rav there. So it's a really eminent and, you know, historic and, you know, famed position. And we're going to be speaking about a very cutting-edge topic, the kosher switch and grumma on Shabbos. And this is going to be a topic that you're going to find is going to dominate the rest of your life. And why do I mean that? You know, Google is coming out now with the Nest thermostat. It's a thermostat. It sits on the wall, and it tells you, it senses when people are in the room, it lowers AC and raises heat or lowers heat, and it's supposed to cut energy usage by 20 or 30%. No, this is not an advertisement for Google. But it's just pointing out to you that everything in our lives going forward, we're going to have smart houses, we're going to have smart water meters, smart electric, smart gears, smart cameras. So if we don't get our handles around grumma, we are really going to be faced with a lot of difficulties. We really have to break down grumma into nitty little gritty pieces. So we're going to have Rabbi Usher Weiss to speak about the kosher switch, and he's one of the experts on this topic. He's written about the topic, and also as the Rav of Shari Tzedek, he has to deal with people who have to use elevators on Shabbos and wheelchairs on Shabbos, etc. Our second guest this week will be one of the brilliant young up-and-coming Dayanim in America, Rabbi Ari Marburger, who publishes and speaks so beautifully. He's the author of Business Halacha, and he's from the Beis Hayroel Lakewood, Bezdin Meisharim. But he speaks it all over. He's really business at Halacha, Chashim Mishpat is his expertise. And the topic will be secular courts. When can you go to court? And some of the answers will surprise you, because we've been taught that, no, it's Messiah. There are times when you can go to court, and we're going to speak about small claims court. We're going to speak about collecting a chayv yadua, like a mortgage that maybe doesn't need any court at all, etc. So that would be a very interesting topic. Next week we will be speaking about DNA in halacha, very fascinating, also cutting edge. And I try to bring you, again, a wide variety of topics and a wide variety of people. Rabbi Usher Weiss is Hasidish, Meretz Yisrael, famed Paisik, does speak English very well, and Rabbi Ari Marburger Lakewood. So again, we have cutting edge topics from all over the globe. So let's begin our program. To ask the Rav to comment, lately there's been a device which has not actually come to market yet, known as the kosher switch. And I don't know if it actually will get to market, but it's being crowdfunded. I don't know if it actually will happen. But one wonderful thing that has come out of the kosher switch is the amount of ribuy and divrei Torah and pilpula deraisa that the proposed proponent of the kosher switch has caused. Whether you like the kosher switch or not, he has caused a lot of ribuy talmud Torah. But I know that here in America, we had a letter from Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, signed by Rav David Feinstein, Rav Belsky, Rav Miller, Rabbi Shaw, Rabbi Reisman, etc., stating that it's a question of an issa, that they believed it's an issa there. I think Rabbi Belsky said there's a chi of skill on it. And we had now a letter come out in Eretz Yisrael, signed by Rav Steinman and Rav Chaim Kinyevsky, also saying that it's, I don't know if the lesson was an issa skila, but they said it's for sure an issa deraisa, etc. And we're not so sure about that, and we'd like to hear the Rav's opinion.
Yes, I was aware that many Gedolim came out with very harsh language about the kosher switch, and the Divrei Chaim 200 years ago, in a totally different context and a different shaila, writes that I was makabel from my great shever, the Boruch Tam, that in issues like this, we shouldn't get into pilpul at all. Just reject it outright and say it's usur. I think that in our day and age, that approach is no longer the wise approach. Because when Gedolim say something is an issa d'oraisa, an issa skila, many people question and say, if you think it's an issa d'oraisa, will you share with us why? And people today are more cynical and more skeptical than they were in the past. Even in the question you just presented to me, you said, we're not so sure about that. So that those are relevant questions that people ask. So I think it is important to state if it is a cheshash d'oraisa, why do you think so? And that is the reason I wrote a lengthy tshuva about this. And when I was recently addressing the Conference of European Rabbis, I was asked to speak about this, and I gave a shiur which was very widely distributed. And I'll just give it bekitza. I really think it's a cheshash d'oraisa. One of the big issues in the sugya of groma b'Shabbos is a contradiction between two basic sugyas. Gram kibui mutar, that's in Shabbos kuf chof. According to the vast majority of Rishonim, it's mitalach atchila. The Ramon Shin Lamedalat Siv Chov based Paskins in accordance to the Mordechai that it is only mitar b'mokum pseide. On the other hand, in Bava Kama Samach of Medalef, the Gemara says, Zoyra v'haruach mesayasoy chayev chatas. And the Gemara asks, this seems to indicate that utilizing a natural force is considered masav, it's not grama, chayev chatas. Why would that be different than libo v'libeso ruach, grama b'nezikim poter? In both cases, he's taking advantage of the wind. Ravashi says Shabbos is different. Maleches machsheves asr toira. And Rashi says naseis machshavtoi. So why is that different than gram kibui? Gram kibui is utilizing a natural phenomenon, a natural force, energy, heat. So why would gram kibui be mita? There are four different approaches to reconcile this contradiction. Shilta geboidem. Many confuse the Shilta Geboidim as if he would be Erish, and he wasn't Erish, but probably the first source, relevant source in our sugya. He does not ask from Bava Kama Daf Samach, but he does say, in Shabbos Kuf Chof on the Rif, Gram Kuibui is only Mutar because his intention is not to extinguish the fire, but rather to prevent the spread of the fire. If his kavana would be kibui, it would be an issa d'oraisa. It would be similar to Zayda v'haruach mesayasai.
Mishnah Berurah does not paskin this way. Mishnah Berurah prays even the kavanas, he clearly paskins, not like the Shilta
Geboidim. Right. However, when you learn the sugya, he seems to be right. The sugya, the machlokes of Yosi v'chachamim, is whether you could put only other vessels around the fire which would not disintegrate, or you could also use klei cheres which will disintegrate, but in Pashtas HaZugya, his kavon is just to prevent the spread of the fire and not to extinguish the fire. The vast majority of Achreinim weren't aware of this Shilta Geboidim, and they, the Pashtas, their interpretation was that Gam Kibi is mitir even if that is his kavon. Second approach is the Zera Emes, Chelak Alef Semem Dalad, and he distinguishes between a situation in which there's a time interval between the Maisa HaOdam and the effect on the Malacha. Zera V'ruach Messiah is immediate, and that's why it's in Issa D'oraisa. Gram Kibui is different. Approach number three is the Achiyeza, Chelak Gimel Semem Samach. Differentiating between a situation in which a malacha was done in a proper and acceptable fashion. Zoyde v'ruach Messiah, so he's winnowing. That's the way it's done. At least that's the way it was done. And therefore it is malachas machsheves. Masha enken gram kibui. That is the strangest way to put out the fire, is to fill up vessels with water and then having the vessels break apart and destroying half of your home, either by fire or by water. The fourth approach is what I wrote in Minchas Sosha, based on the Ritva on Shabbos Mem Zayin. Similar to the way the Rishonim and Bava Basachov Beis differentiate between Dina de Garami Shechayev and Grome ben Ezik and Potter, and many Rishonim, quoted in Tosfos and in other sources, differentiate between Bori Azeka, in which the effect is definitive and predestined, and a situation in which there is a degree of doubt or a suffix whether the tetzor, the outcome, will ever happen. According to all four approaches, the koshes, which are not only the koshes, which all the grama devices, don't pass the test.
But if there's a time delay in the kosher switch, that would be, according to the Zera Emes, that would be fine.
I don't think so, because the time delay is minimal.
So make it a little longer. We'll tell them this, the kosher switch, to make it 2 minutes.
In my opinion, the logic behind the Zera Emes is not a technicality. The time delay by Gram Kibui is a process. A process people could follow and understand. The fire has to spread. The heat has to rise. The klecheres have to break apart. The water rushes out. It is a process. But when you have that all in electronics and a little machine and it is an artificial time delay, in my opinion, that would not be relevant. But even if there would be room for argumentation according to the ZMS, when we are dealing with a Sfeika Deoraisa, you cannot rely on one approach of three or four different approaches regarding a Sfeika Deoraisa. These are suggestions by Achroinim. They ain't even sources in the Rishonim. So could we rely by a Sveika Deoraisa on the ZMS, when in my opinion even the ZMS isn't relevant? To me it is clear that the difference between a time delay is not only time in its essence, but the difference is, by Gram Kibiu, it is a process. Things have to happen.
Another way though to understand the ZMS is to say that Rashi holds, everybody agrees that you need a Maisa on Shabbos. Because if you, Rashi says, Malechas Machsheves Asra Torah by Zaira, well, that's wonderful, but you do need a Maisa. For example, if Amir al-Akam would not be Malechas Machsheves, because Nase Machshavta, if you give it to a cut, it wouldn't be Nase Machshavta. So you do need a Maisa. So Rashi's saying, by Zaira, with an outside factor, that is still enough of a Maisa. Comes the Zera Emes, and he says, if it's at the same time, it's your Maisa. If bitge demaya kayach sheni, something that happens at a later time, it's so not connected that you could say you caused it, but you can't say it's your maisa. And on Shabbos, you need your maisa. If you wouldn't need your maisa, amir l'akum would be a deraisa. That would be another possibility. But let me point something out. So the shulta gibayrim is not lahalacha. Mishneh Berurah says clearly, even by kavana. So we're left with two. We have the Achieza and the Zera Emes. So it's still a suffix, and would buy a suffix the Raisa.
No, we're left with three. We're left with a differentiate whether it's a vaday or a suffix.
Well, but if you want to name that on as a tzad lahalacha, so you're saying that if somebody wants to put kalim of water where it's 100% that the fire is raging and for sure it's going to hit, you would say in that case the Shulchan Aruch would aser it?
Definitely.
But the Shulchan Aruch, you nasnu dvarach al shiurim, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mechalik.
Well, I think it is only because in normal circumstances you cannot know definitively that those kalim will disintegrate.
Now, there's another reason to be mad.
But let me go back to your suggestion regarding the Zera Emes. I think that's pshat. That is the right approach. But it only supports what I say. So when we're dealing with a process, things that need to happen at a later stage, one could argue that is not his maisa. But when you're dealing with technology, which was planned and worked out, and you put on a switch and the electricity will go on in a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I definitely think that would be considered a maisa. That only supports.
But how would that be different than how would that be different than removing the dam and 3 or 4 minutes later the body of water would come and destroy what's in this?
In Shabbos that would be considered a malacha.
No, the Paiskim say Bit Kayach Sheni of Bit Kedemai is not a malacha.
in Shabbos, according to the Gemara and Bava Kama, that would be considered a malacha, in my opinion.
So there's another way to be matter this too, and that is the possibility is that, so we have, I agree with you 100% that it's one sniff to be matter, and by a suffix deraisa you clearly cannot do that. I mean, it's you have many stadim, different stadim, but here's a very interesting difference that the Bells of Dayan and B'nai Brak brought up, and that is that, I mean, he doesn't bring it up in this example, but in the case, let's say, in Hilchos Yom Tov, in Tavkuf Yodalad, it says you could put a candle where the wind is not blowing, and the wind will eventually come, and in that case, it's mutter, even though we hold grum as usser, in this case, grum is going to be mutter. And the Maril has a lush in there. He says, afilu grum alay have. The wind isn't here yet. The wind is gonna, one day, a wind will be created and come. So he says, when it hasn't been created yet, it's not even a grumma. So here, the light is not even here yet. The LED that's flashing this light is not even here yet. And since it's not here yet, a filu grumma, like have it, it's less of a case than any of the cases. The fire is here, the water is here, the wind isn't here yet. The light isn't here yet.
Let me comment, but first I would go back to the previous principles. When we're dealing with a question, which is a shaila of the oraisa, I do not agree that the shilta gabayim is not relevant. I do not accept that. It is true that the achrayim weren't aware of the shilta gabayim. But the Shilta Gebayim is first and foremost in this sigya. The Zera Emes lived 200 years ago, less. The Chiesa lived 100 years ago. Shilta Gebayim was in the days of the Besyesa 500 years ago. The Ramon Cheshemish Bet Chof Hei maintains, and that is a principle we find in many sources, when Achrayim deal with a question and they weren't aware of Divrei HaRishonim, we could assume if they would be aware of that shita, they probably would bow their heads and accept it. Now, the Mishnah Berurah, neither any of these Achrayim doesn't bring the Shilta Gebayim, because the Shilta Gebayim doesn't deal with a contradiction. But nevertheless, he is in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chof. But once again, I don't think any of the interpretations fit the koshes, which neither the other grama devices, I want to comment regarding the other grama devices as well. So I do think we're dealing with a sveika d'oraisa. And I think our case is totally different than gram kibui or bitke d'maya. In Bidke d'maya or Gram Kibbe, we are dealing with a process the human eye could follow. Maleches Machsheves is about perception. It is not scientific criteria. It is about perception. When you have a switch, and people know when you switch to put the light on, that is a mice of putting the light on. The fact that it is built in a way that the white will only go on in 2 or 3 minutes, that is irrelevant. That has nothing to do with the Zera Emes. So in Svora, there is always room to argue to and fro. In my Svora, has nothing to do with the Zera Emes. Even the Zera Emes would agree that this would definitely be defined as Masav. But once again, we have the Shilta Gebayim, the Zera Emes, the Achieza, and approach number 4 that I mentioned, which I wrote about Minchas Osher. I don't think Grama devices fit into any of these. Tov Kuf Yudalad, similar to Reish Ayin Zayin. Two sources in Shulchan Aruch in which Grama seems to be Mutal Chatchila, which contradict the opinion of the Ramon Shin Lamed Dalad Sif Chav Beis. Regarding Tov Kuf Yudalad, the Mishnah Berurah himself deals with it, and he wants Shartzi to differentiate in Sharatzim between Shabbos and Yom Tov. In my opinion, and this is a principle I want to voice very strongly, many present-day Gedolim and Svorim write that there is something which is less than Grama. In my opinion, nothing is less than Grama, because Grama is zero, and there is no zero minus. Grama never appears in Shasra and the Poiskim as a Chiyuv. Grama ben Azikim Poto, Gram Kibui Mutar. The opinions that argue that Grama is also only B'mokum Hefsid, whenever a person does something and he causes an effect at Teitzoa, that is Grama. Nothing is less than Grama. The only thing that is less than Grama is either Sheval Taisa, either when you do something and it has no effect, or, like the Mishnur Brura in the Peskim and Tafkiu Fiu Dalad, when I opened the window, there was no wind. The wind that'll come in a later stage has nothing to do with me opening the window. But we must take that sfora literally. When you plan electronics and you build it and you invest $1 million to put together the system, and when you push the switch, the electricity will go on. Once again, in my opinion, it makes no difference whatsoever what the mechanism and what the electronic process is. That is totally irrelevant. These halachas are about perception, about the eye of the beholder. Especially when we're dealing with a drabonan, even when we're dealing with a diurais. And therefore, the common denominator between Reishai and Zion, in which you close a door or a window and you cause fire to subside, and Tov Kuf Yud Daled, in which you open a door or a window and you cause a fire to subside at a later stage when the wind will blow, the common denominator between these two is La'enei ha'odom, closing or opening the window doesn't have anything to do with a fire. There are a million reasons for people to close or open the windows. Amongst them is not putting out a fire. In the middle of the week, a person doesn't open or close a window to put out a fire. And therefore, that case is not defined by Chazal as Grama, which is an Issa D'Rabbanan. But by pure definition, there's nothing less than a Grama.
But the same
even,
halacha...
Even Koyach Sheni is a Grama. Nothing is less than a Grama.
But even in Tav Kuf Yadal, the Ramaz Matir, not only to open the window, but to actually take the candle outside, L'makim Sharuach Menashev, so you're not opening a window. You're taking the candle, you're putting it outside where you know wind is going to come. So that is clearly much more than opening a window. There is a definitive act. I am purposely taking a candle from my living room table. I'm walking outside to where it's the most exposed area on top of the hill. I put the candle down, and I'm putting it there for that reason because I know wind is going to come. That's a very defined act.
Yes, but even that act, two principles. For now, there is no wind. Principle number two, in the eye of the beholder, a person taking a candle outside and putting it anywhere is not defined as kibui. When a person wants to put out his candle, he blows on that candle and it's out. And therefore, those are the principles of kibui derabonon. The Ramo is a chiddush, but those are the principles of kibui derabonon. Our case, in which a device is planned and manufactured and built with one sole motive, putting on the light, would be different. So I think it definitely would be an Issa D'Rabbanan of Grama, and it is Mamish Asveika D'Uraisa of Amalocha and Shabbos.
Now, Reb Shlomo Zalman was matir by, let's say, Shabbos switches to on Yom Tov to put the pins in. And he held it would not. He said it would be a gram. Now clearly that is technology, and it is something he held it was since it was la'achar zman it would be muta. Now the Archa Shabbos says he changed his mind afterwards, but the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa brings it la'halacha, and that is technology. It is la'achar zman, and he's neming on that since it is la'achar zman it is muta, even though it is guaranteed. So there is some. So, I mean, the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa and Reb Shlomo Zalman clearly held that there was some premise for a delayed act to say that.
Yeah, I think this psak is primarily based on the Shartzi and that Yom Tov is different than Shabbos. And let me just comment. I am not an interpreter of Reb Shlomo Zalman. I'm a tremendous admirer of Reb Shlomo Zalman, but I say my opinion. And that psak is based on the Shaar Tzion, that Yom Tov is different than Shabbos. What I say about the kosher switch, in a way, I say about Groma devices as well, and therefore, I do recommend Groma devices for three bodies in Eretz Yisrael: the IDF, the police, and hospitals.
Even though it's a deraisa.
What is in common in these organizations? They basically deal with pikuach nefesh, but it is impossible to precisely and definitively define sufik pikuach nefesh, and we need to enable the security mechanism to function and flow in a normal way. The same regarding hospital works. So these bodies, which essentially and basically deal with pikuach nefesh, for the lack of ability to define precisely what is suffik pikuach nefesh, I do recommend using different grammar devices. But in my opinion, it is only in a situation of suffik pikuach nefesh that grammar could be used.
To the Rav, I just want to say that I'm not a proponent of the kosher switch, but what worries me is that, you know, and also in retrospect, in reference to the Divrei Chaim, just put a blanket Isser on it, is that I don't know if it's being perspicacious about the future. I had in my office this week a group of investors from the West Coast, and they have invented a light bulb that when you walk into the room, it senses it. When you leave the room, it senses it. It senses the amount of light in the room. Our homes are going to be smart homes. That Google has created a Nest thermometer that senses after a certain time if people are in the room and it raises heat. If we are going to throw a blanket Isser at Grumma, we won't be able to function. We won't be able to turn on the water. I just think it's so important that we break it into little pieces.
I dealt with this very clearly. And at the first chelik of Mincha Sosho, there are four tshuvas regarding electricity, electronics, and Shabbos, from Lamed to Lamed Gimel or Lamed Dalet. And sometimes I think that people that will learn these tshuvas will come to the conclusion that the Mechaber has a split personality, because on one hand, I seem to be a big machmer regarding electricity. And, you know, I argue that besides Moiled, the Besitzchok, and Boina, the Chazon Ish, in my opinion, the most reasonable approach, what is the issue of electricity, is based on the Yerushalmi Shabbos Mem Dalet, which is Makkah B'Patash. But I won't get into that. One of those simunim, I dealt precisely with what you just brought up. By every passing day, it'll be more difficult to avoid activating sensors in our homes. Even today, it is almost impossible. When you open the door, there's a sensor in your air condition. So even if it won't go on, but you're activating a sensor. I brought five examples. We enable doctors that are on call to walk around with their cell phones. But when you walk from one room to the other, the reception signal is going up and down. So would we say a doctor that needs to carry a cell phone should stay put? He shouldn't move, because by moving from one room to the other, he is causing the reception on the screen to go up and down. Even if you disactivate your alarm system, but the sensors are working, and it will become impossible to move around and to live and not activating electronics. And therefore, in my opinion, when there is no kavana, and not even an awareness. And if you are aware, it's not relevant. You're not supposed to be aware. That is not considered a malocha at all. So the distinction has to be, in my opinion, using modern electronics Bekavana, that is a chashash dioraisa. As long as you have no interest, it is not even a derabonan, it's not defined as a malacha at all. And I think that is the basic, my basic halachic approach as I elaborated the
Mincha Sosha. It would be, I guess, a mesasik.
Less than mesasik. I don't think it's defined as a malacha at all, based on my understanding of malachas makah bepatish. It's not even a mesasik. It's not a malacha. It isn't defined as a malacha. I would just like to make one last comment, which I think is very relevant. When the Rambam explains the Isser of Muktzah, Perek Chov Dalad, Halacha Yud Gemen and Halacha Shabbos, the Rambam has an amazing insight that I think is very profound. Why did Chazal Aser Tiltel Muktzah? So the Rambam says Chazal wanted there should be a Shvisa Nikeres Lekol, some unified code of Shmiras Shabbos. So the Rambam argues most people aren't farmers. So Zorea and Koitzer and Ma'amer and Dash aren't relevant to them. Not all are builders. So Boine V'Soysa is not a Shvisa Hanikeres. Not all are scribes. So Koise V'Moichik would be their Shvisa. What would be the unified Shvisa of Kol Klal Yisrael? That would be Tiltel Miktzah. In our modern day and age, we don't plow the fields, we don't sow the fields. We don't build, we're not Soysa. What unites Shomer Shabbos in the entire world is refraining from using technology. If we go down this path, I say b'derech malitza, v'shaftem v're'isim she'ein bein tzadak l'rosha v'ein bein oived elokim l'asha lo yavodoy. Pliny will use a non-kosher switch, Almoini will use the kosher one. He will use the non-kosher cell phone, he will use the kosher one. He will have a Shabbos car and he will have another car. The only thing that brings all Shomer Shabbos together is not using electricity, not using your technology, not using, and according to the approach of the Rambam in Muktzah, I think, beyond halachic criteria regarding Gromes, Dioraisa, or the Rabbonan, I think that is also a relevant concern. So I think we should reject the kosher switch. And generally, Groma mechanisms are to be used only when we're dealing with a Safik Pikuach Nefesh.
We have with us the famous speaker, the author of Business and Halacha, and the Av Beis Din of Beis Hayra in Lakewood, Rabbi Ari Marburger. Welcome, Rabbi Ari. It's a privilege to have you with us.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Ari, if somebody has given a mortgage on a home, or and it's undisputed, they gave a $400,000 first mortgage to somebody, they bought the house, and 5 years later, they stopped paying the mortgage. Does somebody need a heter arkois to go to Beis Din, or can they go straight to court to begin a foreclosure?
Okay, so before answering that question, I think let's just take a step back and first discuss the concept of arkois, and then we'll get to this case, which is very likely an exception to the issur of arkois. To begin with, litigating in civil court is an issur of arkois. There's an issur to go to civil court. The reason for that is really twofold. First of all, it is a tremendous chilul Hashem when you're going to civil court, because in essence what you're declaring, and very publicly declaring, is that you prefer a foreign set of values over halacha. And that's why you're going to a civil court as opposed to a Beis Din that will apply halacha. Besides for the chilul Hashem aspect, there's a separate issur of gezel. And that is, we all know that the civil courts follow civil law. We know that a Beis Din will follow halacha, will follow Shulchan Aruch. In most cases, there'll be a difference between the two. And therefore, if a person chooses to go to civil court, whether he wins or loses, whatever that verdict is, in all likelihood will not be consistent with halacha. Taking money that you're not entitled to alpi halacha is, quite simply, gezel. You're stealing. And therefore, for both of these reasons, there is a very severe issur of litigating in civil court. From Jews belong in Beis Din, that is where they should be resolving their disputes. In fact, when the Mechaber discusses these halachas in Siman Chavav, he begins with the yisr of going to court, and he ends with very harsh language. Very strong language about people that go to court and refuse to go to Beis Din. Now, that being said, there are some limited exceptions. One of them is the concept of a choiv barer. When there is an undisputed debt, the money is owed, there's no the debtor is not denying that he has the money, he has to do so. So over here, the Marsham writes that there is this in halacha to allow a person to go straight to civil court and not to go to Beis Din. The reason being is that this is not litigation. There's no question of halacha or no question of Bote Din do not have a sheriff on staff. They do not have the ability to actually collect the debt. Therefore, going to court, which is the only way to actually get it done, is not being miyakar alilim. It's not a rejection in halacha. You're not taking any money that you're not entitled to alpi halacha, and therefore there is basis to permit that. That being said, two important caveats. The first is that the Marsham that permits it does say it still would be a midas chasidus to at least make an attempt to go to Beis Din. So, you know, my advice to people is that they can initiate legal action, but at the same time, they should make it clear to the person that you're open to dealing with resolving the matter in Beis Din and just doing them both simultaneously. The second point, and this is a crucial fact, is that it is only applies when there's a choyev barer. When there is an undisputed debt, there's actually no question that the money is owed, and it's just a question of collection. On the other hand, if there are any real disputes of halacha, of fact, the defendant has some sort of defense. Now, at that point, it becomes litigation. At that point, it is no longer a choyev barer, and that's something that we require a Beis Din, a dayan, to hear the two sides out and decide who's right. Now, what happens all too often is that whenever there is a dispute, everyone's convinced that they're right. And everyone is always convinced that their claim is a choyev barer. In reality, that is very often not the case. There are defenses or issues that have to be dealt with. And so even if the plaintiff is ultimately correct, once there is some doubt, once there is some question that needs to be resolved, then already it's litigation, and that would certainly require a Beis Din.
So let me ask you a second question. So then basically a mortgage foreclosure or somebody who's foreclosing on credit card debt, if somebody had a firm, assuming that there were no ribis issues, which we're not approaching, according to the Marsham, which I understand is disputed by others, Rabbi Yosef Engel, I believe, disagrees with Marsham, there is some, you're saying it's not really a litigation, it's just collecting. It's just an act of collection, and therefore an act of collection is not really a litigable. It's not litigation. It's not mishpatim. It's just, hey, give me the money that you owe me. But if it mm-hmm. were, now let me ask you a different question. Let's say a contract is signed, and I'm referring obviously to the Sman Chavav. We both agree that to accept local law as the binding arbiter of the case. Would that be a way to, is that a possible, does that override the concept of archais because they were makabel kinyan, you know, they entered into a long set of documents which with kinyanim, etc., and say, we will use, you know, New York law, etc. Does that specify that they've, and for example, like, you know, we have a set of law, Rabbi Kivega says in Tshuva Gimel that you can use, you know, we can agree to have a panel of businessmen be our, you know, arbiters. We can, so you can set a court of mutual agreement before a dispute or even after a dispute happens. Would that create a problem because almost all documents signed today do have, you know, legal, arbitration, etc. agreements in them? And how would you deal with that as a Rav?
Okay, so you've thrown out raised a bunch of points in your question. So I'll try to go through them piece by piece, and we'll see where the conversation leads us. I think the first question, to deal with the last point first, and that is arbitration subject to the same rules of archais? So there, as you correctly pointed out, there is a Kiveger that quotes in Marshach that in certain areas the custom was to have matters litigated by a panel of businessmen, and from the Marshach it's clear that that was acceptable. Interestingly enough, there is a Chazanish that that raises the, that points out that the reason why that's not arkoi, arkoi is the point is not that there is a formal court. It's not, the point of arkoi is not that it's tied to a foreign religion or anything like that. The point is we have halacha. Shulchan Aruch has a very specific set of laws, the same way Hilcha Shabbos, very detailed set of rules of what is mutter, what's usher, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. Choshen Mishpat is just as detailed and has a very precise set of instructions to how to deal with financial disputes. If a person rejects that those halachas and says, I'd rather follow a different set of rules, that is where the problem begins. And therefore, the Chazon Ish says that while there's certainly okay for parties to agree to an arbitration, where the arbitrator will just hear the parties out and do what he thinks is fair, he'll make a pshara, if you will, that is perfectly okay because there's no foreign set of rules. You're simply accepting a person or a panel's decision or judgment of what's fair, what's practical, what should be done in this particular circumstance. On the other hand, if you have a panel that's going to apply a different set of laws, a specific set of mishpatim, there already we're back to a veinu pelilim. There already it's a rejection of halacha, if you will, and therefore would be usur. So an arbitration panel that's just going to apply their common sense and their sense of fairness is certainly okay. An arbitration panel that is that the agreement charges them with applying a set of laws, which is not halacha, there already, according to the Chazon Ish, it would be problematic.
So the AAA, for example, the American Arbitration Association, where would you put them in? Because most documents do provide for first going for arbitration at the AAA.
So the AAA, I believe, is a neutral body. They will provide, you have a list of arbitrators or that are qualified or work through them, but there's no specific set of laws that they're bound to apply. And if you go to arbitration, you cannot go to court afterwards and say that they apply the civil law incorrectly because they're not bound to apply civil law. They're simply doing what they think is fair. Obviously, their sense of fairness will not be rooted in halacha. It will more on the civil laws, but nevertheless, because they're not here to apply civil law, you're not violating our arkoyis by agreeing to accept their opinion.
So the AAA then is a valid and a good idea for people to put in their documents then, if they're dealing with somebody who they're fearful, or maybe it's somebody who's secular, etc., and they don't want to be enter into a shail of arkoyis, putting the AAA into the document is then a very halachically agreeable way to go about this then.
Correct.
We're speaking to Rabbi Ari Marburger, the author of Business and Halacha and the Av Beis Din of Beis Hira in Lakewood. Welcome again, Rabbi Marburger.
Thank you.
So here's the question. Somebody has to go to Beis Din on a small claim matter. It's $250, and the other party doesn't want to come. So they have to go to Beis Din, get a hazmana, sometimes three hazmanas. It's not cheap. The whole matter at hand is $250. So can they go to small claims court, or do they just have to walk from their money because the cost of litigating it is greater than the expense of bringing it to Beis Din? I was asked this question by Reb David Cohn, and it's a bit of a tricky question, but being that arguably you're one of the most brilliant young minds in American Chayshim Mishpat, I figured I would take the chance of asking it to you.
What was Reb David Cohn's opinion?
He felt that you could go to small claims court.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kfar Hirozakein, certainly not going to on the air disagree with Rav David Cohn. I will just bring up a few thoughts, and the first is that the problem that you're raising is really indicative of a more basic concern, and that is al pi halacha, dayanim are not allowed to charge for their time. At most, schar b'teila, if the dayan that you're going to has a job which he has to take off a certain amount of time to deal with the matter, he can pass along what he's directly losing. But in the absence of that, dayanim are not supposed to be charging at all for their time. Now, dayanim obviously have families to support, and historically what happened was the community undertook the responsibility of supporting the Dayanim, because it was a necessity. And the same way, when you go, the reason why the small claims court are able to deal with a matter without charging you, they're not working for free. They're being supported by the public at large. They're being supported by the taxes, and therefore the cost is being spread out among the entire population, not to the person who's particularly involved in the dispute. And therefore, the court system will incur a few hundred or a few thousand dollars worth of costs to deal with your $250 matter because it's needed for society to function. That is historically how Batei Din operated among Klal Yisrael as well. What's happened today is, because we do not have any organized system of Beis Din, the community doesn't appoint Dayanim, the community doesn't support the Dayanim, and it's something which is really, everyone is ishkal yashabein of people. When there is a Beis Din, it just simply means that three people got together and decided they're going to offer their service to the public. But therefore, that's where we have this problem, because we're not organized on a communal level. It's simply an individual or three dayanim that are investing the time in order to help people resolve their disputes. Now, when both parties are interested in resolving it, many Batei Din offer a small claims division where they will either charge nothing or a minimal charge for smaller cases just like the one that you mentioned, in order to make it viable, in order to enable people to resolve their disputes. More often than that, it typically will not come to a Beis Din. It will typically go to a Rav. The two people will sit down with the Rav and try to work something out. The Rav will give a psak, give a pshara, and that will typically take a minimal amount of time and at very, very minimal cost. When you're dealing with the unfortunate case where a person refuses to come to a Rav or refuses to come to a small claims and basically tells the person, you know, you either sue me in court or I'm not coming, you have a very difficult problem. In halacha, you could send a hazmana and you can force the person to respond, and you can insist on going to a Beis Din that will not charge.
Yeah, but very few Beis Dins are going to send three hazmanas and give a heter arkais after a sirah for $250.
Okay, that's true. And
so what would be the heter to go then to? He didn't give me the heter, Reb David. He was really rushed. But what would be the heter to go to arkais, because it's not affordable in Beis Din? Could you try to put some legs to it?
So the approach would be what do you do in a case where there is no Beis Din? A person lives in a country or in a location where there's no Beis Din around. It does not exist. So there are Marah Mekayimos that permit litigating in court, and the basis seems to be that if the Isser is the Chil Hashem, the Isser is the Aveinu Plilim, that you're rejecting Halacha by choosing civil courts over Beis Din, that may only apply when there's a choice. And to the extent that you're in a place where there are no Dayanim, where there is no Beis Din, they're not rejecting anything simply because there's no other alternative other than walking from your money. So that itself is controversial, but perhaps he is extrapolating from that if it is not cost-effective to go to a Beis Din, that perhaps is what he's basing his heter on.
You're referring, I imagine, to the Rajba. Is that what you're referring to?
When you say, yeah, there are a number of other Marah Mekayimos. I don't believe that it's...
But let me ask you a question. This is going off halacha, but as somebody who's done a lot of chayshe mishpat litigation, why can't we as a community fix the broken Beis Din system? I mean, just recently I got a letter, it was massively disseminated, where somebody came to Reb David Cohn, it was in all the papers, so I'm not speaking out of school. It was in Eish HaTorah, you know, their CFO embezzled $20 million. They agreed to go to Reb David Cohn to a Din Torah. They both accepted him as arbitration, and he paskin that the man owns $20 million. And the man then, and it was enforceable in court. And this fellow then went to another Beis Din in Brooklyn, and that Beis Din said, no, they totally overturned Reb David Cohn's psak, and they said he doesn't have to pay it, etc. And Reb David issued a letter. He's saying, what's most astonishing to me is that a Beis Din, which we sat on, many yeshivas, we never even got a call from the other Beis Din before they issued a letter that all our psak is batal. And this is from somebody who is certainly one of the Paiskim of America. David Cohn is, no matter, you know, you could hold these the Paisik, one of the, but he's certainly one of the great Paiskim in America. How do we, You know, it's how do we fix a very broken system where many people sort of are intimidated to go to Beis Din because of, you know, anybody who sort of, you know, has a stamp, a rubber stamp, can open a Beis Din and become suddenly a dayan and call himself. How do we fix this? Do you have any ideas?
So the issue that you're raising, as you correctly pointed out, is not a halacha question so much
as a social or communal issue.
As I mentioned before, a judicial system is a complex system, and they don't just spontaneously evolve. It's something that needs to be set up, and something that needs to be organized. And historically, we know from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, there were dayanim that were appointed. There was a hierarchy of dayanim. There was smaller cases, and what we'll call the Supreme Court until you got to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, until you got to Moshe Rabbeinu. Today, unfortunately, at least on a communal level, there's no attempt to organize a Beis Din.
Why is that? And let me go also beyond social, and even beyond the Yannis. Your very esteemed father-in-law was the president of the Aguda for many years. Why has the Aguda not attempted to create, as the leading Haredi organization in America, attempted to create a Beis Din that would give legitimacy? And when I say legitimacy, it would mean all these pop-up Beis Dins. You know, I'm sorry, you know, you get, you know, hazmana from anybody or everybody, and alternatively where you have Bat Edinim, which sadly could sit on a psak for 6 months or 5 months or 9 months while people are distressed and they allow, you know. Why doesn't Aguda make this? I mean, having a court system is sort of the backbone of any society. Why hasn't Aguda, as our leading organization, tried to do something about this?
I'm certainly not going to answer for any organization. That's something which...
Yeah, but just could you take a stab at it, or just a wild guess?
Okay, so again, I don't want to take a stab at Aguda's motivation or any particular person. I will say in a general sense that having or running a Beis Din is a fairly thankless task, because just mathematically, you're going to have a case, there are going to be two sides, and in all likelihood, one of the two sides is going to come out upset with the verdict, and in more cases than not, both will, because whoever won didn't win enough. So for an organization that's involved with other activities to take on a Beis Din is... it's a fool's errand, because you'll undermine your ability to do all the other good work that you're involved with. So an existing communal organization that's respected and very active has this reputation to protect, and therefore it's difficult for them to open a Beis Din. If you're going to start from scratch without an organization...
I think you nailed it. I think that's a brilliant answer. Let me just share with you an anecdote that somebody came to the Maril Diskin, the famous Maril Diskin, who was Rav in Yerushalayim before that, Rav in Brisk, and for Din Torah. And afterwards, he lost and he was unsatisfied, and he began, you know, issuing, you know, saying bad things about the jurisprudence involved. So the Maril Diskin called him and he said, "It says Elohim loy sekalal, you can't curse a judge." He asked the fellow, "Who do you think the Torah is referring to, the winning party or the losing party?" He said, "We would imagine the losing party." He says, "And even to the losing party, it says an admonition, Elohim lo sekalal, you can't curse the dying." It seems that there is a certain point where we're supposed to respect that we do need law and order in society, or ishes riyeyu chayim b'loy, and that's why. But I think your reason as to why a leading organization hasn't come out with it is actually brilliant. But let's go back to halacha, okay?
Okay, but before we go back, I just want one disclaimer. Our discussion was how come we're not fixing the system. I think it would be more accurate to say how come we're not improving the system. It's not quite. It certainly has its issues, but I don't think it's quite as broken as some people may believe. One of the reasons for that is that the most vocal people, the people who speak about the system or the process the most, are typically the ones who went through it and were hurt.
Well, but how do you explain a letter, which I've seen from Reb David Cohen, where he says they totally invalidated our Beis Din's psak without giving us the courtesy of a phone call?
Mm-hmm.
And this is another leading dayan in Brooklyn.
I haven't seen the letter, and I don't know which Beis Din it is. I'm not going to comment on a specific case. But the fact that there are specific actors that perhaps do not do things appropriately is a problem, but does not mean that a person who has a litigation cannot choose a Besdin that will have good results. You do not need every Besdin to be perfect. You just need a Besdin to be perfect because, as you well know, when there is a dispute, you can never be forced to appear in front of a specific Besdin. In the olden days, we were a Besdin Kavua, where a community had one Besdin. That Besdin had that power, and you were forced to submit to their jurisdiction. Today, where that doesn't exist, there's a lot of jockeying and discussion about which Besdin to go to, but ultimately, no one can be forced to a specific Besdin. So the fact that there are one, two, or three Bate Din that you may feel do not act appropriately, you can always insist on avoiding those. And while you will not be able to impose your choice on the other party, but you can enforce that. It's something that requires mutual consent, and ultimately you can make sure that it's in a Besdin that you're comfortable with.
So Rabbi Marburger,
important decision to make.
Let me ask you another question. We're speaking to Rabbi Ari Marburger, the one of the young, brilliant experts in Chayshe Mishpat, the Dayan. Somebody starts building next to your property line, your neighbor. Do you go to the local inspector? Do you call 311 in New York or in Lakewood, or I don't know the number, but do you call the building department, or do you go to Besdin?
The first thing you can do is you knock on your neighbor's door. And I know this sounds obvious, but I cannot tell you how many times I've dealt with this kind of matter. The first thing to do is talk. He's your neighbor. You're going to be living next to him for a very long time. Try to work out the matter before going to litigation in either a Besdin or in any other sort of forum. Now, if that doesn't work and it's clear there's a property line and he's just building over your property line, so then there can a very strong argument can be made is that this is included in the Marsham. This is not litigation. This is he's simply building on your property, and since he can't do that, the inspection department are the people who have the jurisdiction and the ability to prevent him from building. On the other hand, if it is more of a question, if he matter, if it's questionable in halacha or in fact whether what he's doing is correct or not, I certainly would recommend going to a rav with him and trying to resolve the matter there.
Well, thank you very much. That was Rabbi Ari Marburger, one of the young, brilliant experts in Chayshe Mishpat, one of the young Dayanim in America. Thank you very much for your time, Rabbi Marburger. Well, thank you very much for joining us our program. You can listen to us again on WMCA 570 or at WMCA.com or at the Nachum Siegel.com, a Nachum Siegel network. By the way, I'd like to give a Birchas Nichumim to Nachum Siegel on the loss of his mother. For all his listeners, I was actually in Achamavel at his home in the Lower East Side, and got to meet the family. And so we would all like to say to Nachum, Amakim Yenachem Eschem, Israel Sharav Elitzim, Birushalayim. She certainly raised an amazing and a beautiful family. Next week, we will be speaking about DNA and halacha, cutting edge topic. And I look forward to speaking to you again next week. All the best. Thank you.